This is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. You've made the commitment.
You caught the vision.
You want your family to serve God.
But sometimes it's hard to put feet on that vision. Hey, Hal, do visions have feet?
How do you get from principle to practice?
What do you need to know about the issues affecting your family?
How do you apply God's Word in the 21st century?
Let's talk about it.
This is Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young.
Hello, this is Hal.
And Melanie.
And we want to welcome you to the program. Today we're going to be talking about a subject that's gotten a lot of discussion on our blog and on our Facebook page. That's a question of books that boys love. How do you get boys interested in books and interested in reading them?
You know, I was really surprised at how much attention this drew. You know, we posted a blog post we'd done about this to our Facebook page. It was over 400 shares. Tens of thousands of people saw it, you know, over 100 comments. I was interested to see, people really want to know what kind of books do boys love that are good for them to read.
Yeah.
You know, character building books that boys love. It was a hot topic. I was surprised to find out, were you?
Yeah. But then maybe not, because I know, well, there's an unfortunate thing going on in the library community, if you will. It's not just a school thing, but there's a desperation to find books that young people, and particularly boys, would be interested in. And sometimes they lower the bar so far that they're thankful that people are scanning printed words, and they don't really think too much about, is it worthwhile stuff? What are they putting into these young minds? What's going to influence them? Because, you know, somebody said, if you want to know a person, look at their bookshelf, because that'll tell you how they think.
Well, you know, this really struck me when, you know, I was in graduate school in education many years ago. And that was very much the attitude, if we can get them to read, who cares what they're reading? Well, I care. You know, I remember a professor recommending a really potty mouth book because boys would want to read it, and if we can just get them reading. But that's not enough. I mean, you know, if someone isn't eating well enough, yeah, we want them to eat, and we may stretch it to help them try all kinds of different foods, but we don't give them poison.
No, and that's absolutely right. You know, and it's like if you get somebody started by reading at best lightweight, formulaic stuff and much worse things, if you get them used to reading junk, then how are you going to transition them into good literature? How are they going to get good character building, mental aptitude building, you know, culturally enhancing kind of things? If you don't give them a taste at the very beginning.
But, you know, Hal, I think that a lot of us are hampered by our own education. You know, I went to really one of the top high schools in the nation.
Mm-hmm.
But when I got ready to teach our children the classics,
mm-hmm.
I was intimidated.
Right.
Yeah, and I'm a graduate of one of the top high schools in the nation, but I was intimidated about reading whole classic books because, you know, all the books we'd had growing up had been, you know, excerpts of these classics. And I thought,
right.
Oh, it's going to be hard. It's going to be boring. And it hit me like a ton of bricks one day when I was saying, this is great. This is so interesting. They're called great books because they're great.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. They have stood the test of time. And, you know, we have dumbed down so much of our culture and we have anthologized it so much. It's kind of like we're patting our kids on the head and saying, they're there. We don't expect you to sit down and concentrate. We know you're not capable of that.
But you know, Hal, there's a lot of moms out there saying, wait a minute, but I can't get them to read at all.
Mm-hmm.
What are you talking about? Great books. I'd be happy if you'd read the newspaper or read the comics.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be reading something. Yeah, so let's talk about how we get our boys to love reading, and then let's talk about the kind of books boys love. How about that?
Okay. Well, I tell you what. I think the first thing I've seen, and you know what? I grew up in a home with a librarian. You know, my mother was a school librarian, and she loved books. And my grandmother was a teacher, and she loved books. And that was just something that, it was just around the family. We got books for presents. We went to the library. You know what? I had the example of the adults in my home being readers themselves. And they told me, they showed me that books were valuable, that books could be your friend. That books were, you know, a gateway into a whole world, sometimes a world that doesn't exist, sometimes a world that used to exist but doesn't any longer. But there were so many things you could do with a book in your hands. And I think that's really the first key, is be a good example. Let your children see you read.
I think that's an excellent idea. I remember a friend of mine that often when I would drop in at their house in the evenings, her husband would be reading the Word of God. And I remember thinking, what a blessing that their children are growing up with that example, that that's what dads do.
Yep.
One of the things dads do is they read the Word of God. But, you know, I think we've got to deal with the fact that a lot of boys aren't comfortable reading.
Mm-hmm.
Reading is hard for them.
Mm-hmm.
And that needs to be dealt with right up front, because, you know, we had one son that was severely dyslexic. We had a couple that had some learning glitches. And, I had such bad examples with my brother who'd been dyslexic and had a horrible experience with the special education programs in the schools.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he ended up graduating from college and becoming a very successful entrepreneur.
Yeah, he's a wildly successful businessman and everything else.
But
years were awful.
Yeah, it was horrible. And so I had a real hesitation to seek help for our boys,
mm-hmm.
because I thought, I know that was no help.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I wish I could tell people that there's good help, too, you know, that you can get good help. I know something that really helped us a lot was Diane Crafts Materials.
Yes. Diane, spell that.
DINNECRAFT.org. DianeCraft.org. Diane with two N's.
DIANNE?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
And
kind of unusual spelling.
Well, her brain integration therapy manual,
mm-hmm.
is kind of weird. It has a lot of weird exercises,
mm-hmm.
some weird written exercises and weird bodily exercises. And I know our son that did it absolutely proved it every day. We did it every day for a year.
Mm, yeah.
It was pretty nightmarish. But now he stands at our booth and he tells people, you need to try this with your sons and just ignore him if he throws a fit.
Mm-hmm.
And because that's the year that he learned to be really fluent reading.
Yeah, and you know, I think there would have been less resistance if we had figured out that's what he needed sooner, rather than stumble around, you know, in our state of, well, maybe not denial, but our state of, surely it's not that, surely we can do something different. And, you know, I think by waiting as long as we did, because we really didn't know, I think it got into that adolescent or that pre-adolescent time frame when,
yeah,
everything becomes a bit of a struggle.
Well, I really wish I had gotten him help sooner. I think it would have been a real blessing. And mm-hmm. And there's a lot of different phonics programs that can help.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's got to be something that they can do without stewing about sounding out the words to really enjoy it.
Uh-huh.
And so you need to help them get up to speed. Sometimes it just takes time. You know, they need to get older.
Right.
Yeah, you know, because this idea that kids are supposed to learn to read at 6 to 7,
right.
that's when the average kid learns to read. But some learn to read at 2 or 3,
mm-hmm.
and some at 12 and 13.
And that's all within the realm of normal.
Yeah, that's really kind of scary. Now, if you're looking at a kid who's not reading,
mm-hmm.
by the time they're 9 or 10, you're probably going to make him and you a lot happier if you give him some help, give him some of Diane Crafts Materials or something. But get him reading well.
Yeah.
I think that's the first step. Now, in the meantime, though, I think there's kind of two issues. He
right.
doesn't like to read. He doesn't like the action of reading.
Okay, because the process of looking at the words on the page is not working well for him.
It's just too hard.
Right.
Versus he doesn't enjoy reading. And they're often connected, but they're two separate things.
Okay, how so? Because I'm thinking something that might be different. How do you separate those?
I'm thinking a boy who doesn't enjoy reading maybe hasn't learned the delights of reading.
Such as
being able to enter a whole different world in your mind.
Oh, so you're saying that maybe it's not just a matter that the process of reading is difficult, but the material he's being given to read is not catching his imagination.
Right.
You're saying it's not something that's interesting to a young boy to look at and to say, hey, this is worth digging out, because there's neat. You know, it's an interesting thing. People talk about kids having very short attention spans, and yet, have you ever watched a young man who has an interest? He has a hobby. They, I mean, especially young guys, they don't go in for hobbies. They go for obsessions.
Obsessions, yeah.
You know, and they can study for hours and hours, and they'll ferret out all kinds of information all over the place if it's something that has caught their imagination. And so that could be part of it. And it doesn't mean, oh, well, let me go find some of these books that have a lot of double entendres in them and lots of, you know, rough language and
no,
stuff.
No, but stuff that's going to appeal to them. I think one of the problems may be that for boys who maybe haven't become comfortable with the process of reading as early,
mm-hmm.
the stuff that they're able to read when they're learning is not really up to their intellectual ability. And
important.
It's kind of boring.
That's an important point.
And so I think one way to help your boys learn to love reading
mm-hmm.
is to fill their lives with story.
Okay. And see, now that's a good thing, because one of the things we found really helpful, and by the way, we have an earlier program we talk about dealing with these kind of struggles, but one of the things that that we found very helpful was audiobooks, books on, well, cassette at the time, books on CD, downloadable files that are audiobooks. Because, you know what, if you've got a hesitant reader or one who's not quite up to speed yet, that doesn't mean that he's slow intellectually. It means he has a problem in this one little area.
Yeah, and he may be even very advanced intellectually.
Sure, sure. And so getting audiobooks into them allows them to take in the richness of well-written language and to learn all of that information that maybe they're not quite ready to read yet.
Well, what's really cool then is when the process catches up.
Yes.
Then they've already learned how the written word sounds.
Uh-huh.
And they know how to understand a long paragraph.
Mm-hmm.
And so their reading comprehension just skyrockets. And it's really exciting to see a child can go from, you know, barely sounding out words within a matter of months to reading very advanced novels.
And you know what? Let me give you another little hint here. I know a lot of parents are not real comfortable readers themselves. And I'm sure they've heard the advice, oh, you need to read books to your young children. You need to read them storybooks and read them fairy tales and things like that. Maybe mom or dad is not a real comfortable reader themselves.
We really hear that a lot.
Well, you know what? Those audiobooks bypass mom and dad's problem too.
Yeah.
Okay? So if you can find somebody doing a good, clear reading of good literature, even at very young ages, then you can all enjoy that. You can all enjoy that book together, just like, you know, maybe you're watching TV. Well, we sit down and listen to a recorded book.
Really, it's better because when we're watching TV, first of all, we can't do other significant work because our eyes are engaged.
Right.
And lots of times I'm sitting here looking at a pile of laundry that I wish somebody would fold. And, you know, if they're watching TV or a movie, they're not going to fold it. But if we're listening to an audiobook, there's no reason they can't fold it. In fact, it can help them keep concentrate because they're using their hands
mm-hmm.
and keeping them busy. Another thing is you can listen to a wider range of books, listening to them, than you can watching them on movies, because sometimes the imagery is frightening to children, but a book is limited by your experience. What you can picture is limited by your experience and by the description in the book, and so a book tends to be less frightening than a movie to children.
I remember a story about a young person that was really concerned that there were people watching dirty movies. And the parents asked, what do you mean by dirty movies? And he fumbled around for a minute and he said, people are spitting. You know, well, see, his imagination limited how bad it could really get. Whereas, you know, if you get the full graphic load from an adult with a depraved mind, you're going to get more than you want to process right then.
One last thing that we need to address in this area of how do you get boys to love reading is, you really have to limit the movies and the games. And I know we slip into it, too, even though we don't have TV or cable. They end up watching Netflix way more than they ought to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they're constantly watching stories, they're not going to be as tempted to read.
Right.
And if they're constantly playing games, they're definitely not going to be, because
mm-hmm.
the games cause a release of adrenaline and of excitement hormone
mm-hmm.
that your body can become very addicted to.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about that some on the blog, don't we?
Yes, we did.
And when they become addicted to that constant charge of hormones and emotions, then they don't want to do anything else.
Right.
They don't want to read. They don't want to work. They don't want to do school. They don't want to go outside because they're addicted to the release of those hormones.
Well, you know what? We need to take a break, and then we can come back and start talking about some specific titles. But you know what? I wanted to tell our listeners about some really good audiobooks that we have available that are already tested out and family-friendly and will teach great language and great character at the same time. And for one thing, my favorite is The Hero Tales from American History. Okay, this is a this is an audiobook that is based on the written book by Theodore Roosevelt. And
yeah, like
Cabot
President
Lodge.
Teddy Roosevelt.
Right, the same one, but before he was president. And it's it was their attempt to write a book to teach character and patriotism to young Americans using stories from American history. And it's fascinating. We had a lot of fun. We dramatized it some. So when we did the reading, we added music and sound effects, and it's, I mean, it's a lot of fun. The stories are short. The chapters stand alone. It's a four CD set. You can get it on our website at raisingrealmen.com/ourstore and follow those links down there to find The Hero Tales from American History.
Yeah.
Now, we have two other audiobooks that are of great interest.
Oh, yes, we do. You know, Pollyanna was one our family discovered last year. Our daughter found an antique copy and said, "Mom, would you read this and see if there's something I can read?" Mm-hmm. I'd read it. Hell, I thought it was going to be preachy and boring, didactic.
Sticky, syrupy.
Because I've heard people called Pollyannas, and I didn't like those kind of people that were called that.
Right.
And I thought, uh-oh. Well, I started reading it. I started laughing aloud. I was reading it late night. Everybody was asleep. I had to put it off.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, this is going to make a great family read aloud. It was so great that our teenage boys would say, "Hey, you're not starting Pollyanna, are you? Wait till I can get in there." It is hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll teach your children gratefulness and having a contented and good attitude. It's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
You can get that at raisingrealmen.com/Pollyanna.
Yes. And there's one other thing. It's not an audiobook. But, man, it's a good book. And, in fact, they just won an award. It's called A Cry from Egypt. It's a book by Hope Auer about a Hebrew family at the time just before the Exodus. If you ever wondered what was it like growing up as a young person enslaved in ancient Egypt and seeing the plagues of God falling on your neighbors and somehow missing you. Wow, what a dramatic thing. Great story, well written. Just this past week it was chosen as Book of the Year by the Christian Small Publishers Association. Fantastic book. Where can we get that, dear?
You can get it at raisingrealmen.com/A Cry from Egypt.
Okay.
Or you can get it at acryfromegypt.com and read Hope's very cool blog.
Very good. Okay, so if you're joining the program late, this is Making Biblical Family Life Practical, and we are worrying ourselves a little bit about the topic of how do you get boys to read and what do you give them to read. We were talking about how. What about the what? The what's important, isn't it?
It really is. You know, what kind of books do boys love? Lots of times we get this wrong as moms, you know, because I was really surprised to find out what my boys enjoyed. You know, the action adventure is pretty obvious. They want things that are full of adrenaline.
Mm-hmm.
They want excitement. They want exciting, you know, cliffhangers. They want danger. They want adrenaline.
They want heroism.
Yes.
They want to see people who are put in danger and then fight their way through it and emerge victorious at the end. You know, and that's it's kind of an old formula, but you know what? It's a good thing because young people are optimistic and they are very much black and white, justice-driven people. They want to see good triumph in the end.
And that's why they love mysteries,
mm-hmm.
because they want to see good triumph. They want to see people brought to justice.
Mm-hmm.
And the mystery story is the genre that really does that.
That's true.
It focuses on tracking down the criminal and bringing them to justice.
And that can be big, like counterfeiting rings or espionage or even violent crime, or it can be the small things, the conflicts that happen in the neighborhood and in the family.
Like the farm mystery series.
Uh-huh.
You know, by Castleberry Farms. You know, that one is the mysteries aren't very big and they're not at all scary, but there's still a lot of fun.
Right. Now, one of our favorites has always been the Sugar Creek Gang series by Paul Hutchins.
Now, look for the old ones by Paul Hutchins.
By Paul.
Not the new ones by his daughter or granddaughter.
Mm-hmm.
Because the new ones lose a lot of the boyishness because they're trying to appeal to a broader crowd. But the old ones do a great job of capturing the inner voice of a boy. They just ring true.
They really do. And the written books are fantastic. But there's also, you know, Moody Radio did an audio series. They made a radio series out of them. And you can get those. I think you can get the print editions also, can't you?
Yes.
From our friend Heather Idoni at BelovedBooks.com.
Yeah, she has a lot of audiobooks. That's a great go-to place for audiobooks.
Mm-hmm.
BelovedBooks.com.
Yes.
The thing I like about the Sugar Creek Gang series, too, is it is very gospel-oriented, and not in a preachy or awkward way, but in a very boyish way.
Yeah, it's kind of like the way a 9- or 10-year-old boy would kind of see the world.
It's excellent. They are just fantastic.
They're awesome. We really enjoyed those.
You know, boys love humor and joke books, too.
That they do.
And that's one of those things that's short
mm-hmm.
that a young new reader can really get a kick out of.
Mm-hmm.
And
you know what? They're going to read that for comprehension because part of the joy of a good book of jokes is I get to tell these stories later on.
That's right.
So they're going to read it over and over to make sure they get it right.
You know, nonfiction is something that surprised me because until I was an adult, I really had no interest in nonfiction.
Now, see, obviously you were not a boy because
right.
boys love nonfiction. I mean,
they do.
And stories about aircraft and about military history and about explorers and all any kind of big machinery, things that explode or people that explode them. I mean, all that kind of stuff. Guys love nonfiction.
And if they have a hobby or an interest,
mm-hmm.
buy them a nonfiction book about it. That'll get them reading.
And, you know, there's a lot of things, too, especially if they have an interest in something that is like a hands-on activity.
Yeah.
It may be model building, it may be artwork, it may be gardening or carpentry or fixing lawnmowers, anything like that. You know, there's all kinds of good handbooks, a lot of how-to manuals that are copiously illustrated, but they have lots of text, too.
And teaching a boy how to take a manual like that and turn it into a project is a great skill for future fatherhood.
That is true.
You know, save him a ton of money in his life.
There's shelves full of this kind of stuff at the public library, and there's also some of the Amish Mennonite publishers have some really good manuals for that kind of thing, too. Do you recall some of those?
Christian Light Education has some.
Okay, that's a good one to look
for. You know, also, there's an old series called the Landmark series that is nonfiction. It tells the story of different events in history.
And they're by actual authors.
Yeah, they're by experts in the field.
Yeah.
And so you can just – that enthusiasm just – pours through it.
Oh, yeah. It's fantastic. You see, you know, stories about different naval engagements, and they're written by C.S. Forrester, who wrote the Horatio Hornblower series. And, you know, there's different, like, Civil War historians, like Bruce Catton, I think, wrote some of these short histories of different aspects of the war between the states. So it's good writing, and it's written all about it, maybe a 7th, 8th grade level or something, kind of like USA Today.
Well, probably 5th to 7th, yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, one thing about it is the books that appeal to moms don't always appeal to boys.
Mm-hmm.
And especially the emotionally intense things, those don't tend to appeal to boys at all. They want excitement, but they don't want a lot of interpersonal stuff.
Yeah. That's.
Now, there are some that tend to appeal to both boys and girls, like the Little House series. You know, the Little
House
series
surprise,
is thought of as girl books, but there's a very strong male character there.
Yes, it is. Pa Ingalls is one of the fantastic people in American literature. And, you know, he is a strong paternal figure that guides his family. And he really lives out, I think, a godly ideal. He's a man who's very self-sacrificing, a man who's very diligent in his work. You know, you almost never see him depressed or downtrodden. You know, he never seems to lose his temper. He's what a great role model. And,
yeah.
And then there's also the book in there, Farmer Boy, which is about the man that grew up to be Laura Ingalls' husband, Almanzo Wilder. That's a fascinating story about, you know, what was life like for a young man growing up on a farm in about, what, 1850-ish time frame?
1860s.
Sometime in the mid-1800s. Man, what a great look at that through the eyes of a young man.
Now, there's some books that are crossovers that are fictionalized but are almost nonfiction. I think about James Herriot
mm-hmm.
and his stories of being a vet in country Yorkshire in England.
Yeah.
You know, because those stories, he fictionalized them because he had to live in the town, you know?
Oh, sure.
He fictionalized them, but they're very much based on his real life adventures.
Those are good read alouds because occasionally, this is something that we found out, when you read the older books, and sometimes the older books are the best, you still occasionally have to change a word or two.
Yeah, some words that were acceptable in the 30s are not acceptable now.
And that's not the point of the story, so it's perfectly acceptable to substitute a more modern term or to skip a passage if necessary.
Now, that brings up something I want to talk about, bowdlerizing things.
Yes.
Which means taking out the bad stuff. And, you know, that was very hard for me to do because I grew up with a very high view of books.
Mm-hmm.
And to actually mark in a book would just gave me the heebie-jeebies. But I realized that, you know, I could take my black pen and remove a few words and make a book completely acceptable for my sons.
Just a little dot, a white out somewhere, or a little bit of a permanent marker in a key space. You know, a lot of times, unfortunately, a lot of times books, and particularly fiction, have some junk mixed in just to spice it up.
Particularly books that appeal to older boys. You know,
right.
That becomes a real issue when you've got teenage boys who want to read spy thrillers and military fiction. And typically they throw in some foul language and they throw in one or two sex scenes.
And usually it has nothing to do with the plot.
Usually it has nothing to do with the plot.
It's just like, okay, now it's time to bring the floozy in.
Yeah, well, I think about, you know, there are some Tom Clancy novels that are just trash. There's other Tom Clancy novels that if you glue a couple of pages together and mark out a few words are great.
Yeah.
And fantastic and teach good things for teenage boys.
Well, see, this is one of the things that I think responsible parenting says you need to be aware of what your young people are reading or what they're going to pick up around your house.
And
we had some things that we had to say, you know what, this doesn't belong in our bookshelves anymore because maybe I as an adult can read this and can filter through some of the junk that's mixed in. But I don't want to have to explain this to my 8-year-old daughter.
Or it may not have enough redeeming value to justify it because some things we're going to let them read because they need to understand something.
Right.
Or they need to understand something about the world. They need to be exposed to things. Now, that's going to look different at 13 than at 17.
Yes, it is.
At 13, you're going to be pretty careful about what they're reading. You're going to limit some of it, and you're going to talk a lot about it.
Mm-hmm.
By the time they're 17, you've got to realize they're going to be out of your house soon. And so they should pretty much be choosing their own reading material by then.
Which you can't just say, okay, you've turned 16, now you choose your own.
No, you have to gradually get there.
You transition through these things.
And
yes.
You get there by reading some things you don't want to read so that you can discuss them with your son.
True.
You know, and by giving them advice, like what piece of advice I gave our sons in their teen years, I said, you know, I loved science fiction when I was a teenager. But really, that's a genre you probably ought to leave alone until you're a little older. Well, why, Mom? My friends are reading it. Well, because a lot of the people that write science fiction choose that genre because they're unhappy with the laws that God created in the world.
You know, an interesting point. A lot of us grew up watching Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Star Trek is interesting. One of the reasons it was so successful was because it was based on the premise that human nature does not change with the passage of time. And so a lot of the situations that come up on board the Starship Enterprise could have come up on the USS Enterprise in World War II. You know, the same kind of interpersonal conflicts, the same sort of snap decisions in combat, what happens when a mistake is made. And that's why that was a successful thing. But yet it was a lot of things in that world were limited by, let's say, the standards of television broadcasting at the time.
Yeah, and so it limits how bad it can get.
Yes,
and
those limits are no longer there on TV, and they never were there in books.
Right, and so lots of times the authors in science fiction chose that genre so that they could take things to, they could create a world without God.
Yeah, let's just turn morality on its head and see how it looks.
Right, and so that is a particular genre that they need to be careful of. But again, there are some Christian books that we reviewed a couple on our blog, you can go search for, that don't deal with that. So it's a balance, you know, and it's a transition from the younger kids where you're going to be pretty much supervising everything to the older kids where hopefully you've taught them how to pick and choose, how to overlook evil, or to decide this is too evil and get rid of it,
mm-hmm.
and how to get the good stuff out. Now, somebody had a great question here, Hal,
yeah.
if we could deal with it quickly.
Sure.
He said, my son's drawn to comedy, but it's hard to find things of educational value. And comedy is tough.
Well, it is. You know, a lot of, well, you look through Scripture, you can see that there is humor in Scripture. There's some situational stuff in the Bible that is absolutely hilarious if you can step back and look at it. And yet, Scriptures are very plain that we are not to be mockers. We're not to be blasphemers, which doesn't just mean making fun of God, but it means being people that just tear down folks' character.
And so it's difficult to find that. The James Herriot books are hilarious.
Right.
You know,
it's true. There's a lot of fun in those.
You know, the ones I've laughed out loud many times reading the All Creatures Great and Small.
Yeah.
Very, very funny book.
Yeah.
And so that's an advanced funny book. What's the one with the butler?
Oh, you're thinking P.G. Woodhouse.
P.G. Woodhouse. Now, that's for an older teen. You're going to have to edit some.
Right.
But my 14-year-old has read some of those.
Yeah. Now, he spells it. His name is spelled W-O-D-E-H-O-U-S-E, but it's pronounced Woodhouse.
Yeah.
And P.G. Woodhouse was, oh, my goodness. Yeah, his stuff is hilarious. Now,
again, you might need to edit out some.
There's a few things that are, you know, ridiculous. There's a lot that's ridiculous. And there's some things you have to say, you know what, this is not a way to find and win a wife.
Yeah.
There's a lot of broken engagements in there because there's such silly people involved in the stories.
Yeah,
but
it's funny.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, definitely that's something to look at because guys are drawn to it. And there's a lot of bad humor. And frankly, some of the bad humor is funny. But that doesn't mean we should be chasing after it.
Yeah, we are all out of time.
Yes,
I do want to say real briefly
mm-hmm.
that there is only 2.5 hours left in the Ultimate Homemaking Bundle Sale.
Yes.
And if you buy it tonight, it's less than $30 for over 80 homemaking resources. Really good stuff. Caroline Allen's character badges.
Mm-hmm.
Our friend Heidi St. John's book is in there. Great stuff.
You got some things you wrote?
Yes. I contributed a chapter to The Pursuit of Motherhood.
Mm-hmm.
And if you buy it in the next 2.5 hours through our link, you can download the Mom and Dad ebook, audiobook special of one of our best-selling books.
That's right. And you want to find out all about that, so go to raisingrealmen.com/bundle.
Yes.
And that'll tell you the whole thing, but you've only got until midnight on Monday. Today's the 28th, isn't it?
28th. And so
Monday the 28th.
Hurry out there and get that. See, we've never offered our book free like this.
Mm.
So this is a great opportunity, but it's only 2.5 hours more. It's been delightful being with you tonight.
One of our favorite subjects.
I hope that you've gotten some ideas about helping your boys to love reading and finding more books that they love.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for being with us tonight.
Yeah. So, look, we hope that you'll join us again next week as we come again to talk about making biblical family life practical. And until we see you again next Monday night, or perhaps on the downloadable version, then we'll talk to you then.
See you next week. Bye.
You've been listening to Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young. If you found this program interesting, challenging, and encouraging, why not join us on the web at halandmelanie.com. That's HalandMelanie.com. Or follow us on social media. You can find us on Facebook at Facebook/HalandMelanie. Or Facebook.com/RaisingRealMen. This program is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Join us next week when we'll be back to talk about making biblical family life practical. Until then, thank you and God bless you for listening.